they had to saw a coconut in half, like the Foley sound editors used to use to clip clop to make it seem as though there was a horse. So yeah, but nowadays I think the most recent actors' strike, one of the things that they were fighting against was what the studios called virtual extras, which is basically they scanned some extra and they kept the data, so years later they could insert the virtual extra into the background of a 3D setup. So, you know, that way you just have to pay the technicians, who unfortunately, the special effects technicians, their output has gotten sloppy over the years, again, because there's only a limited number of these people, and they are artists, and when you expect them to generate, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours of this stuff, you kind of pull them too thin, and the quality of the virtual computer-generated imagery suffers a lot of times, unless you got a lot of extra scratch for extra time and such, and a lot of open time that, you know, you don't need to get a schedule done. CGI is getting sloppier over the last few years.
Well, you know, it's the world and it is as it is known. The obsession to get the money and the recognition that compete with others. And it seems like, you know, just about everything we've discussed tonight, these creative endeavors, you know, are obsessed to money and fame and the need to be recognized. Maybe it can be done some other way.
Well, I don't know. I think recognition, again, is kind of built into our gene pool. You know, people kind of are proud of their accomplishments and want people to know about their accomplishments. And, you know, it's part of an ego, and it's probably healthy to have a degree of an ego. Wanting to remain completely unknown, you know, kind of would indicate some unusual type of a person. You know, if you invent or discover or understand something, I mean, you don't necessarily want to be voted king, but you want, you know, maybe a little statue in Central Park where a pigeon, kind of defecates on your image or something, just for the heck of it, that you kind of came and went. You know, it's a little touch of immortality, and human beings are obsessed with immortality.
Well, think of the possibilities of the unknown. As the unknown in the world, the unknown in the possibility of documenting media, the unknown in perhaps making the world a better place effectively. A person is effective in what they're doing, then the recognition is not so important. The other question is, maybe a person has something to say and they make their money in some other way.
Well, again, that there are people who kind of do that. I mean, there are stories of people who labored through the years looking up through a real low-quality telescope and marking down positions of everything and, you know, doing it there in entire adult life for, you know, not terribly, you know, a lot of money or no money at all if it's their hobby and they're relatively economically comfortable through inheritance or what have you. So again, it depends on the individual. There are people who are completely greed-driven, and there are some people who couldn't give a damn. They have the money that they want. They don't want any more money, but they're obsessed with something that most people aren't even particularly aware of, and they make discoveries or they make documentation of records that help other people come up with brilliant solutions to what's causing things. again, it's a mishmash, and you never quite know who's who. A lot of times there are guys who seem to be one type and end up being the other type, because human beings also are very capable of lying and cheating and stealing other people's ideas and presenting themselves as things that they aren't, and all manner of things. But, you know, there are there as well. Our job as fellow human beings is to figure out who's the good guy and who's the bad guy.
Well, you can start with what media or television, social media, advertisements, they tell you this is what you want. Most people believe that. They say, oh, I have to get that, I have to get that. So there's an obsession to run after the money to get this object, this thing, whatever it is, you know, and the stress caused by that, the conflicts and the competition, the world as it is known, you know, maybe a person can figure out what it is that they want, not to be told what they should want, and so they can get more fulfillment and happiness in their life, getting things that they really want and not things that they're told to want.
Well, it takes a bit of maturity and thoughtfulness to figure that out. A lot of times people want to be like other people. People want to impress other people. You know, the old adage about a guy who spends money he doesn't have to impress people he doesn't like by buying things he doesn't need. So there's a lot of people into status symbols. You know, there's an old joke about a guy who buys a Porsche another guy kind of talked to him and says, why did you buy the Porsche? You know, it's kind of expensive. And he says, well, I want people to know that I got a lot of money and I can't park a piano, you know, a Stein piano or something. So, a lot of people do a lot of things to impress each other. Or if they see that the society in general is impressed by an object, or they want to demonstrate that they possess that object. Again, human nature. There are other guys that don't give a damn about any of that. They live their lives the way they want to, and they don't really care about other people's opinion. They don't want to impress anyone. But, you know, that's not the average person. But they do exist.
QSO. But if these products, objects, things, they somehow have a value, you know, that the quality is there, then wouldn't these things be able to sell themselves without excessive advertisement messages?
Well, they will to some people. But not as many as the manufacturer would like to sell. Advertising is a very profitable endeavor, and you know, like the old saying goes, it's worth this money, much money, because it makes at least this much money. You know, if it costs you $1,000 to sell an extra unit, and the unit cost gives you profits of $5,000. Then you're going to go to that ad agency. If on the other hand, you're just going to get one unit that's only going to get you $50, you don't. The reason why advertising is popular and all over the place is because it's effective. People are affected by suggestion. And unfortunately, very commonly in politics, very often it's the amount of money you spend on a campaign. The person who's running for office is almost meaningless. It's, you know, were you able to collect $500 million to get ads and all kinds of advertisement going on this person and bury their opponent in mud? You know, unfortunately, again, it's human nature.
Yeah, I think it's the world as it is known. The obsession, you know, for money. And the obsession for money, money talks, you know. And perhaps, like, the politician that is raising money for a campaign, you know, people are easily influenced, but what would happen if they have some very valuable things on their agenda?
It depends. It depends whether it's perceived as valuable. A lot of people, I mean, if you follow politics, and we're not going to really do it here, vote against their own self-interest. They vote for people who are promising to do away with programs that helps them get through their lives. But because it's presented in a cultural war environment of us against them, and even if you suffer, the other guy's going to suffer more. So let's make them suffer more. You know, unfortunately, again, it's not that difficult to get people to vote against their self-interest, to buy things they don't need, to spend money that they don't have. You know, credit makes the world go round here. So, and far too many people have no money in the bank. You know, I forget the percentage, but something like, you know, 60% of the population don't have $500 in cash just in case there's an emergency. A lot of people have debt to credit cards and other debts that they live under, and they continue to get farther into debt. Again, it's unfortunately human nature. It would be nice if everyone in elementary or junior high school or high school were taught significant amounts of economics and such, but I don't think that's ever going to happen.
I think that a person, if they're smart, are able to, a person who is smart is able to see past what the media, TV, advertisements, those things, to see past all of that, you know. And I also think that what we have today, you know, in terms of interaction and activity between people as related by the media and television, that it's basically the same as it was far back in time. Like, even the old days, you know, the old days, and maybe even more, how to say, times like Michelangelo, you know, we're back to that. Yeah, we're back to that, Michelangelo. You know, back in those days, it was the same activity between people as it is now.
Well, I mean, fundamentally, the forces at work are the same, but how they present is clothed in the present culture, which is quite different than those days.
Well, I mean, think about the intention from one person to the other that hasn't changed, and you know the fact that people really don't—they don't care so much for the other one. They're more interested in themselves. And the idea of money being a motivating force, you know, money back then and money today, you know, money somewhere in the middle.
Okay. Well, you know, I mean, the differences in classes were more significant back then, although we're getting there very quickly. It's going to be all of us serfs and a couple of knuckleheads who have $1 trillion sitting in a pile someplace. But, the underlying nature is the same. But, you know, if you try to get some correlation between a 21st century person who had to have the latest iPhone into something that relates with the Middle Ages, you'd be stuck. There really wasn't quite that consumerism of the general public, you know, unless you were royalty or a banker, You're basically just worried about getting your next meal.
Yeah, but iPhone might be innovative, might be different. But, you know, iPhone also has so many flaws in it. So it's not quite the perfect replacement, you know, for other kinds of communication. I think the next step from the early days would be a phone that is landline. You know, people had a landline where you put your finger in the hole, you turn it, and you dial the number. And, you know, if you wanted to call long distance, you had to speak to an operator.
Yeah, I don't think those days are coming back. I mean, I saw a joke idea of what the future will bring, and it was Futurama. There was the Apple Store in the 31st century, and they had something called the iPhone that was spelled E-Y-E-P-H-O-N-E, and the idea was that rather than carry around what looked like a candy bar, they inserted the iPhone into your eyes. And you just kind of talk to it and controlled it that way. But, yeah, ultimately there's no real corollary for medieval communication. Medieval communication was you wrote on a piece of paper and gave it to a messenger, and they got on a horse and traveled the distance and dismounted and gave the piece of paper to a scribe who read it to the guy, because he probably couldn't read by himself. And, you know, that's very, very technologically different than an iPhone.
Well, that's a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are delivering a message from, I think it was a prince. He was delivering a message to someone in the royal family, and Rosencrantz and Guildenstern give the message to the recipient, and they are cut down, both of them, because they delivered a message that was very negative from the prince. And that took the blame for that.
Oh, okay, you kind of skirt around Hamlet. It was supposed to be a letter from the King of Denmark to the King of England that included Rosencrantz and also Hamlet. And the letter said, you're a good friend of mine, do me a favor and please kill Hamlet. But Hamlet found the letter before it was given to the King of England and changed it and had it read, you're a good friend of mine, please kill Rosencrantz and the other guy and send Hamlet back. So that's how Rosencrantz and the other guy got killed, because Hamlet changed the wording in the letter.
Wasn't that show, it was a stage production in downtown New York City, and I saw it, but I didn't know who the characters were.
Okay, well, I don't know. The original, at least, it was Hamlet that changed the lettering, and it was the King of Denmark, who was his uncle, who murdered Hamlet's father. That tried to set him up to be killed by the by England.
Strange. I was under the impression that Rosencrantz and Guildenstern delivered some kind of negative message. You know, they were put to death.
Yeah, it was a letter that a counterfeit letter from the King of Denmark saying, "As you are my friend, do me a favor, kill Guildenstern and Rosencrantz." That was the, and having done that, instead of Hamlet being killed by England, Hamlet returned to Denmark and killed the king and a few other people, and was poisoned, and his mother died. It was a tragedy. You know, most of the important people died in the final scene.
Yeah. So if you look at what it was like back then, you know, you realize that today isn't much different how people are, you know, the interests and the things that they want to accomplish.
Okay, but you have to understand that that's a drama. It's a tragedy. It's a fiction. It never happened. There were, I think, Danish kings called Hamlet. Funny thing that Shakespeare had a son who died young, whose I think his name was Hamnet. But there were such things, Hamlet. But it's fictitious. It's not a historically accurate story. Anyway. David, it's been a pleasure as always. I thank you for your participation. It's already coming up close to 10:30, so we're going to have to call it an end to the segment and move on to Paul.
QSO, have a fantastic night. KG2RY.
Thank you, David. Well, Paul, take it away. SpaceNet report.
Okay, Roy. Pretty good. This is WS2N. Based on report, Dave's always got good stories. I like listening to Dave's input. Very good. Yeah, a couple of items I was going to cover this evening. One was the Terra Wave, but we did that earlier today. Terra Wave satellite by Blue Origin. They're going to add over 5,000 of these things to Earth orbit, you know, for broadband capability. And then, you know, he's already got, I think, 180 of the LEO satellites up, which is a different version, a lower throughput than the TerraWave system. And then I think in days there's going to be another launch where he's going to add more satellites to the LEO system, so he'll be up to, like, I don't know, 250 of them. His goal for that is going to be around 3,000. So, you know, he'll have over 3,000 for LEO, and he's going to have over 5,000 for the TerraWave system. And that's just Blue Origin. I know we went over all that earlier today. But that doesn't even do what Elon Musk has. He has the 10,000 operating ones now. And he plans on adding another 20,000 to that group. And that doesn't even include the 1 million that we talked about earlier. So, what are you going to do? We're gonna follow those stories. Now I just wanted to talk about the ISS. We've talked about this many times where, you know, eventually it's going to have to be deorbited around 2030, 2031. They plan on sending out a SpaceX Dragon that's been, you know, supercharged with all kinds of extra fuel tanks and extra Draco engines on the back of it, where they plan on slowing the whole down by around 250 miles per hour. And just by doing that, you know, over a period of time, maybe, half a day or so, the whole thing will start to deorbit, burn up in the atmosphere over the Pacific Ocean. That's the goal. But now there's been a couple of politicians and on both sides of the aisle that have submitting a bill to try to do something a little different. They would like to, instead of deorbit the space station when the time has come, they'd like to put it into a higher orbit. Now, you know, we've talked about this before, what would it take to put the space station into lunar orbit? Well, we figured out that the numbers would be almost impossible for be able to accelerate the space station to 25,000 miles an hour to escape Earth orbit. It's time just to slow it down by 250 miles an hour to deorbit it, and that's with a lot of fuel. It's a separate contract that SpaceX already has from NASA to do that. I think $1 billion plus category to be the contractor to follow the space station now to orbit. And, you know, just to get that to 250 miles an hour, that's slower. That's a big deal. These two politicians, one from Alaska and the other one from California, would like to accelerate the space station and put it into a higher orbit. And, you know, it's an interesting idea. You know, you have this space station that's been built since 1999. They started putting parts up there. And now the thing is as big as a football field, literally, including the end zones. And it weighs 1 million pounds. That's 500 tons. And 500 tons is a year. I read somewhere where that's the equivalent of two freight locomotives, you know, these big diesel locomotives that you see go by. Take two of those things, and that's what the International Space Station weighs. And that's why it's such a big deal to try to slow it down 250 miles per hour. You need to increase the speed, not by 250, but at least probably around 500 or 600 miles per hour to get it to a higher orbit. And we'd like to be able to, right now it's 250 miles high. They'd like to be able to get around 450 or maybe 500 miles high. And the reason for that is the space station, if you don't do anything to it right now, if you don't ever, you know, use fuel to accelerate the space station, and they've been doing this since it's been up there. You know, anytime a spacecraft goes up and they have extra fuel or purposely they accelerate the space station to try to get it up maybe a mile or two or three. The shuttle used to be able to get it up 12 and 14 miles higher. That is the only way that they're able to keep this thing from not picking up air, rarefied air, which actually slows the space station down. If nothing was ever done to this million thing, no more acceleration by fuel, you know, just leave it the way it is right now. They estimate within around 2 years the thing would start, would be going slow enough from atmospheric conditions to actually deorbit. So, you know, they can't do that. And you would have the space station coming down who knows where. That would be like the Skylab incident where, you know, they cross their fingers and hope they didn't kill anybody when that thing came flying through the atmosphere. There was not enough money and the planning wasn't there to do that properly. So the last thing you want is the space station to come down willy-nilly. But this raising it, you know, it actually sounds pretty good. It would probably, instead of cost of $1 billion, it might cost you maybe $3 or $4 billion to do something like this, which isn't too bad because that's what they do now. They spend around $3 or $4 billion on the space station to keep it not only flying, but to sending crews up there on a regular basis and keeping it as a great laboratory. So it would be a big deal that you have to maybe get the, you know, something equivalent to the Starship that Elon Musk is building that he keeps blowing up working, or maybe even New Glenn, you know, with the Jeff Bezos Blue Origin rocket, which would be big enough, and find a way to have that docked to the space. That would not be easy, but, you know, try to get that upper stage attached to the space station and ride it off. And maybe that would accelerate it, you know, fast enough to get to the 500-mile location. Okay, now, they predict if you can get it up to, say, 500 miles, it would stay in that orbit for around 100 years. You know, it would eventually slow down. There are rarefied molecules at that location, so around 100 years from now, it would slow down to the point where it would deorbit. If you want it to last like 1,000 years, you know, bring it up to you know, 1,000 or 1,500 miles above the Earth and leave it there. Now, the purpose of leaving it there would be they could use this sometime in the future. You know, here they spent $100 billion, literally, to build a space station. And, you know, it's going to be a shame at the end just to, you know, burn it up, let it burn up in the atmosphere. And once it was that location, you know, they'll never have to touch it ever again. There is a problem with it. They would need to have it fueled enough where it would need to be able to autonomously be able to move, because, you know, in the future you could have satellites or meteors or something coming by that could hit this thing and you'd want to move it out of the way. So, you know, there is a, you know, continuing maintenance charge for keeping the space station either at 500 miles or 1,000 miles above the atmosphere, above the Earth. We'll see. It's just a proposal. I don't think it'll happen. I think the consensus with politicians and even the taxpayer might be to let the thing deorbit. Let's forget about it. Basically, that's what they did with Mir. If you put it into the computer, you know, Mir re-entering the atmosphere, you can see it burning up over the South Pacific. You know, that's what they did after 15 years of operation. And when I say they, I mean the Russians. And we also spent some time on the Mir spacecraft, space station as well. Any comments? WS2N. Nothing heard. Looked at my outdoor temperature down to 15. A lot better than what we had yesterday. I saw 4 degrees at night. Another topic. The new Glenn. We talked about that quite a bit here on the net. That's the one that has successfully, that has gone up. Put a two spacecraft on its way to Mars, and the first stage came back and landed successfully on the drone ship called Jacqueline, named after Jeff Bezos' mother. And the second stage, you know, eventually let that continue on. You know, it did its part by pushing the two satellites scheduled to go to Mars in that direction, and, you know, that was successful. That second stage, has a rocket called the BE-3 engine on board, liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, and that's able to, you know, do 180-degree turn, ignite the engine, slow it down, and burn up in the atmosphere so you don't leave it up there. And, you know, so that, you know, that's planned for all the future flights until now. Now Blue Origin is starting to think maybe we should go back to what they call the Javis program. Javis was, when they started developing New Glenn, they always had plans of reusing the first stage, which they've already done. And they had plans of, you know, creating a second stage that was going to be reusable as well. They're going to build it out of, instead of what they use now, this aluminum alloy structure. They were planning on using the stainless steel, and they were going to go through this elaborate procedure of reusing that second stage. Now they're starting to think, well, maybe it's not a bad idea, because each flight, the second stage costs like $50 million alone. The first stage, you know, fine, that'll come back, and they'll be able to reuse that, refuel it, and send it back up again. But for every flight, they're going to be losing $50 million. It's still going to be a little hard to compete with SpaceX once they get their Starship operating, which will be completely reusable. So they're starting to, well, maybe we should be able, we should be thinking about bringing that second stage back, figuring out a way to do it. But it's, rationale behind it, too, is that right now that that second stage has two BE-3 engines. I mentioned BE-3 engine before. Has two of them on it. The future new lens are going to have four BE-3 engines. Each one puts out 130,000 pounds of thrust. It's all liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. And that's going to be very expensive. Right now it's $50 million for the two engines to try to bring them back. You're going to have four. They say that's going to be, you know, $100 million a shot every time one of these rockets go up. They think that will not be as competitive as they would like, you know, against Starship. Right now, it would be fine against Falcon 9. In fact, this thing is about three times the volume of a Falcon 9 rocket as it is. No problem competing against Falcon 9. Falcon 9 does the same thing. They go up at the first stage, comes back, first stage lands on a airport, comes back to land. But the second stage, that's toast. They burn them up every time. But, you know, it's relatively small compared to a new Glenn system. So I'm looking forward to reading about plans on doing in the future. If they really think on thinking about redesigning this whole second stage, which would be a big deal, but it would be interesting if they ever followed through on it to bring down the cost of launching their rockets. Any comments? I'm 2100H, but I'll keep it going. It does start to cook after a while. Talking about Falcon. Falcon 9 has got another launch. Well, they got like a launch every other. It seems like every other day, every third day, there's another Falcon 9 going up. Although they have been a little slow lately, but anyway, on Wednesday this week, they're going to be sending a crew back to the International Space Station, a crew of four. Right now, on board the station, two Russians and one American, Christopher Williams. I think his name is Ido. He's the only American on board, and he's handling everything on the American European side of the space station. The two Russians, they have their end of it. And the normal contingent of people on Station 7, and it's been like that for quite a few years now, but it dropped from 7 down to 3. You might remember a month or so ago when they decided to bring back four people, because one of those four has a medical problem. Don't know what that problem is yet. You know, NASA will not release any medical information. You know, if the crew member wants to do that on their own, that's different. But they came back. The reason they had four come back instead of, you know, it's only one person that's sick is because, spacecraft is going to leave, and there's four seats on that spacecraft. I mean, four people have to leave the space station. You can't, like, send the vehicle back to leave the rest of the people on station without an emergency vehicle to leave on. So the flight rules are, if you have, you know, seven people up there, you need seven seats to come back at all times. So that's what happened there. So that's why they went down to three. But now, on Wednesday, they'll be going back to four. You have Jessica Meir. She'll be the commander of the flight. Jack Hathaway. And, you know, he's you know, the European Space Agency. You know, from the European Space Agency, you have Sophia Andalette. She's from France. And Jack Hathaway is American. And there's four people that go up. And there is a cosmonaut, Andre Fedev, I think it is. Anyway, he'll be the fourth member. They always send the Russian up on every flight. And the same, every time the Russians go up, they always send an American up with them. The idea of that is if a spacecraft ever has to leave, which they just did that with the four people that came back, this way there's always at least one American or at least one Russian on board the space station at all times. They made an agreement, from day one before ISS was ever launched. So, any comments on this or anything else? Okay. By the way, the Falcon 9 returning to flight, they've been grounded for, I guess, a couple of weeks. This one of the flights that just went up, the second stage, did have a problem igniting the rocket engine. They need to be able to do that. And apparently SpaceX has worked through it. It's a problem with private companies. They don't get much information. I'm not sure what technically went wrong. And apparently they say, oh, we fixed it. And then I guess NASA says, okay, you can launch. That's not good enough to me. I think NASA should require them to release the information so we know exactly what happened before we, pour more money into these companies, through NASA. Unfortunately, that's the way business is done with this current administration, unfortunately. Any comments? Okay, I don't know if anybody's been on HF lately, but on the 4th of February, there was a solar storm. It didn't create a corona mass ejection, but it was a big solar storm. And they said it affected the, should have affected the radio waves. And they give it a designation. This one was an X4, dot four. I think X4.2, well, whatever. X is the strongest, strongest one you can get, out of regular flare, out of the sun. They have different letters, three or four letters, and the last letter is X on the list, which is the strongest one. And the four stands for, it's like a linear effect. In other words, it's four times more powerful than the first one. I don't think it's logarithmic, but I think it's just four times as strong. And in this case, it was 4.2. But, I made some contacts on 80 meters. It didn't seem to affect that. But I wonder if anybody else had a problem. WS. Nothing heard. Guess with cold weather, the Super Bowl, and who knows what else. Whatever. I don't have anybody out there with any comments or questions, and I've gotten through my list of things I wanted to talk about. I wonder if anybody wants to bring any other topics up with the 5 minutes we have left. WS. Project Hail Mary. That was a book that I read. I know where he read that as well. Now they have a movie coming out. We'll see. That's supposed to be coming out in March. I'll go see it. But now I'm going to turn this back over to Roy. We'll be on tomorrow night during the Club InfoNet. And that always comes on at 8:30. He's repeated. That's always followed by radio. The Swap and Shop with George, and then that's followed by radio this line. And I got to do something with my voice. I head to the doctor this week, see if they can change the medication. Anyway, over to you for a WS1.
Very good, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet. Thank you for all that you do on the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. Thanks to everyone who participated tonight despite the Super Bowl. Thank you. I hope you'll join us next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. As per usual, I'd like to remind people a couple of clever sayings, one being... Dick, K2IW, who would always end his technical nets with the advice to be kind to each other, and good old Epictetus, who said it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try and keep your mind open to new ideas, but not so wide open that your brain falls out, because you're going to need it one of these days. Have a great week. Stay safe. Be well. Stay warm. And please, if you can, join us next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. This is AC2GS formally closing our Super Bowl edition of the Technical Net, and I will be clear after I say, Slava Ukraini.
Okay, take care, Roy. Do you remember what year we lost, Dick? Was that 2020 or 21? I was just trying to think of that.
I think it was 2020.
Right, that was the beginning of the COVID. Yeah. Wow. Time flying. There you go. Wow. Hey, Roy, you ever hear of the pill hydroxyurea? It's a good pill, but I think I'm losing my voice.
Yeah, it's an oldie but a goodie.
Yeah, works good. Anyway, I use it up. It's not normally used for what I take it for, but normally it's like a cancer pill, but this is, it works. But I'm gonna try to get something different. Either that, I'm just getting all the voices going. Thank you, Roy.
Yeah, it happens to all of us. But, yeah, check it out and see if there's something else you could use that doesn't have this particular side effect.
Yeah. I've been on it for years, but...
Time complete.
Anytime I read this stuff, you know, I go through Dr. I used to go through Dr. Google, now I go through Dr. AI. And they tell you all this good stuff. Okay. Good net, and we'll catch you next week, Roy. Very good net. Good topic. And 73, AC2GS, WS2M.
Thank you, Paul. Be well. Is AC2GS clear?
Yes, thank you guys for the net. KC2SHO.
Oh, good. Take care, John. Hope you can make it next week. Very good. WS to Winston.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.